if we want to get the best performance out of transition cows, we need to look beyond just putting calcium into those cows, because like that review of 22 papers, the effect is actually reasonably limited, and up to day one, there's an effect. But when we want to get a successful transition cow period, we're not just thinking about day one, we're thinking about the full lactation, we're thinking about production, we're thinking about fertility,
yeah.
Fewer issues, fewer vet calls. That's successful transition cow management.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Boost digestive health, performance, and profitability with Digesterone Prime, a feed additive that enhances digestion and immune function in dairy calves. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Agrarian Solutions, research-backed microbial solutions for healthier, higher-performing livestock. AgriComfort, the cow comfort specialist, because her longevity is your legacy.
Hello, welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. Today, I'm happy to welcome to the show John Lawler. John is the Managing Director of Anchor Life Sciences Limited. John, thanks a lot for being on the show today.
Thanks, Barry. It's an absolute pleasure to be chatting to you today. We've done a lot of research in the past, and one of the big areas that kickstarted all was a lot of your research back in the day, looking at the role of inflammation and what it does, and starting to think a little bit differently about transition cows and performance, and to see, well, you know, is it all about calcium, or is there something else at play? And that really started the kind of ball rolling. And I think we've learned an awful lot more in terms of transition cows, maybe in the last 5 or 10 years, than we have for a long, long time before it. And there's a lot more data and research being done in this whole area. So another 5 years, 10 years, we'll know a huge amount more.
Yeah, that's exciting. Thank you. Let's start a little bit with where you're from, how you got to where you're at. It doesn't sound like you're from Pennsylvania necessarily.
No.
Tell us about how you got into this space.
This is a very strong Irish accent. So I grew up on a dairy farm just north of Dublin in Ireland. My local hometown is actually the hometown of Pierce Brosnan, who used to be James Bond back in the day. So we have a bit of a link. So at home, we milk about 350 cows on what we would call a liquid milk system. So autumn calving and spring calving, and trying to produce as much grass as possible from forage, and particularly grass, if we can. And I suppose I went from the farming into business. So I spent 5 years with Alltech, the nutritional supplement company, and then started with a company called Celtic Sea Minerals. And they harvest a special type of seaweed called Lithothamnion calcareum up in Iceland. And that business has a human health part of the business. It has an animal health part of the business, which is Celtic Sea Minerals. And now we have Anchor Life Science, which is an animal veterinary product division. And between all of those, we have about 130 peer-reviewed published papers on the role of that seaweed. So it's very well studied, understood, and can do an awful lot of really fantastic things. When I saw some of the data of the beneficial role in terms of animal and human health, that's where, I suppose, Anchor kind of sprung from. How can we apply this type of seaweed into a range of animal health products? And that's really where, I suppose, the product we have today, Cowstar Complete, has really kind of come from.
Very cool.
For more than 25 years, Agrarian Solutions has been guided by our RISE core values: relational, integrity, strategic, and excellence. Since 1996, we've been a global leader in proprietary bacteria technology, delivering research-backed microbial solutions that help livestock defend against environmental challenges like mycotoxins, supporting health, performance, and reproductive success. From science-driven innovation to trusted relationships, Agrarian Solutions exist to help others succeed. Learn more at agrariansolutions.com.
Maybe we could take a minute and help us understand, like, at least to people in the U.S., I think if you're like, oh, I'm going to feed seaweed, maybe people think of methane reduction or something, but like, help us understand, is it like dried and ground? And what's the logic of using a seaweed for cows?
Yeah, so there's three species of seaweed. There's brown seaweed and green seaweed. And when most people think of seaweed, they think of the stuff that washes up on the beach, and that generally is the brown seaweed and the green seaweed, very much a kind of a foragey kind of a plant. And if we think about it, it's a bit like I compare it to making silage. You know, you let the grass grow, you cut it, you take it away, and then it grows again, you cut it, take it away. That's the brown seaweed and the ground seaweed have that kind of a life cycle.
Okay.
Our seaweed, Lithotamnia calcarium, is a red species, and it has a very different life cycle. So it grows down to a depth of 15 meters because it needs sunlight for photosynthesis, and it grows really, really slowly. And what it does is over a long time, it absorbs 74 different minerals from the seawater, and it embeds them in a very unique plant matrix. And then over time, as it matures, it gets carried away on the current to an area of dead material. So we only harvest where the dead material is. We never go near the live plants. We leave them to keep producing and growing. We just harvest over the dead material. So as a comparison, I would say that the red seaweed is more like an apple orchard. You have the trees, they grow a crop of apples, they fall down. We take those apples away, but we leave the trees to keep growing apples every year.
Yeah. I like that. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. So as a product, it's purely a mineral product. Like I said, there's 74 different minerals, but what makes it unique is that because our plant structure, they're very bioavailable in the human and in the cow, very different. So say if you say main calcium source might be limestone, a rock source is not nearly as bioavailable, whereas the calcium in our product is completely bioavailable.
Kind of like what we talk about with like milk complex calcium versus a supplement, like for humans, same idea. Yeah, that's cool.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I know your anchor is focused on transition cows. So maybe we could start off with you work across different systems, kind of work with people around the world. What do you see kind of as big trends in terms of managing transition cows? Are we making progress on reducing disease incidence and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. In the last month, I've been to South Africa, I've been to Holland, Ireland as well. We do a lot in New Zealand as well. And I think it really depends on the region you're in. Some countries are at the cutting edge, like America, in terms of using negative DCAD diets as much as possible and then supplementing cows at the point of calving to try and improve performance. And other countries are really far behind, where really what they're trying to tackle is clinical milk fever.
Okay.
They're just dealing with the cow that's gone down. They get her up, they get her going, and they think that that's what they can do to solve it. But the one trend that really is growing everywhere is the use of oral calcium supplements. The ability to pick and choose higher risk cows and target a kind of a treatment program on them to try and reduce the risk of those issues. And that is growing very strongly. The US being probably a more mature market, but certainly in Ireland, we're probably 5 or 6 years behind the US. Other markets could be 5 or 6 years behind us. But the one thing that's really clicking into gear comprehensively everywhere is the picking and choosing of cows and the supplementing to try and reduce the risk, because there's no bigger problem or pain in the backside than a cow that goes down and then trying to treat her and lift her and get her going. And there's a good chance she'll end up never really coming to anything anyway. So it's just something to be avoided at all costs.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. And maybe a lot of our listeners, I mean, we have listeners from all different systems, but maybe you could help us understand a little bit better. What are the biggest pain points for pasture-based systems versus TMR-based systems? Do they differ very much or not really?
Yeah, I suppose very very different and very the same at the same time. So pasture-based systems, particularly if cows are out on grass during the dry cow period, it's a complete recipe for milk fever.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. We see that in South Africa. We see it in New Zealand and we see it in Ireland. Our biggest challenge, I would say, on the European side is we have a strict ban on the spreading of slurry during the winter.
Yeah.
So generally what happens is you make your first cut silage, the really good stuff that goes to your milking cows, your highest yielding, and then you put as much slurry out as you can on the second cut and the third cut, and it's loaded with potassium. And you can't, you know, you're just restricted. And on every grazing system, it just plays havoc. So certainly in Ireland, UK, lots of countries, the main cause of milk fever is not calcium. It's potassium. Absolutely. Too much potassium locks up your magnesium. You can't get the calcium going when you need to. So that's the biggest challenge. I think in other systems, like in North America, you know, the forage diet you have can be quite high in calcium. So you could be dealing in, a 0.8, 0.85% calcium in the background. In Ireland, it's probably 0.6, maybe 0.55. So you have to tackle calcium and also potassium levels in the diet, whereas us, it's very much the potassium. and managing grazing. After that, where the factors are different, the challenges are still the same when cows are calving in, and the amount of time it takes to try and avoid the issue and the cost of that issue are the same. No matter what part of the world you're in, it costs exactly the same when that cow goes down. And obviously, the subclinical cow is the biggest cost of all. It's 80% of all of the cost of milk fever is the subclinical cow.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Help us then. You made a point that I'm not sure I would have seen from my vantage point, that you said, you know, we see increasing adoption of oral calcium boluses at calving or shortly post-calving. What's your read on, I guess, the research literature on that lately? What's the takeaway points?
Really interesting. There was a paper, I don't know if you're aware, from Ma et al. It was published a couple of years ago. And they did a meta-analysis of 22 peer-reviewed published papers on the use of oral calcium products and essentially what they were doing and what they weren't doing. And I think the traditional thinking is, if we can keep that cow on our feet on the day after calving, we've done everything we could do, and she'll have a great lactation going forward. It'll be very productive and reproductive. And this paper really said, actually, the data doesn't support that viewpoint. So what it did find is, in the day after calving, in terms of clinical milk fever cases and retained placenta, the use of oral calcium products did reduce the risk of those two diseases. But when you go to 4 days in milk looking at subclinical milk fever, no effect. When you go to 3 weeks looking at uterine infections, displaced albumism and ketosis, no effect. And when you go to 100 days, you look at energy status in terms of body condition scoring, you look at milk production, and you look at fertility, no effect. So I think it does a certain amount, but it may not just do everything we think it's going to do.
Interesting. And how do you think that intersects with the concepts of the transient hypocalcemia and persistent? Are you familiar with those ideas?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We use a good bit of that research from Jesse McCarthy and Cornell in the development of our product. It's interesting. Some of our data would support it, and some of our data would say, when we get the calcium levels quite high in those cows in those first 4 days, they produce more milk than any other group of cows, the ones that go down and back up or the ones that go down completely. So I think we need more data points to see exactly. And I think if you look at the latest research from Cornell, you know, where they looked, the initial paper was looking at the transient cows and the delayed cows and the four different groups. And then they looked at the calcium level as being the kind of driver. You know, if calcium was low on day one, but okay on day four, well, then that was perfectly fine. And I know they've reviewed and actually looked in terms of inflammation markers of all of those cows to see what's happening. And they've also seen a link, certainly in one of those groups, that it was inflammation that was also a key factor in that. So I think this whole area, like I said, where you started all those years ago, looking at inflammation, has a much bigger role to play. And our data would support that in terms of what we've seen. We certainly see that there's more than calcium at play here.
Yeah,
if we want to get the best performance out of transition cows, we need to look beyond just putting calcium into those cows, because like that review of 22 papers, the effect is actually reasonably limited and up to day one, there's an effect. But when we want to get a successful transition cow period, we're not just thinking about day one. We're thinking about the full lactation. We're thinking about production. We're thinking about fertility, fewer issues, fewer vet calls. That's successful transition cow management. And if we want to achieve that, and certainly our data would support, we need to think about more than just calcium in these cows.
Okay, that makes sense. Like you said, that's like one of the biggest headaches for a farm is down cows with milk fever. Nobody likes that. It's a headache that you feel horrible for the cow. But let's say, you know, we have strategies. They're hard to implement in some systems, but we have strategies that are pretty good at reducing that, right? But we still don't have great performance from all of our cows. So you said we got to look beyond calcium. So what do you think about then? What's the next things you're looking at?
Yeah, so I suppose when we were looking to develop the product first, we kind of had the philosophy, well, you know, cows have three problems at calving. Calcium is only one of them, but immune function and energy status are two of the massive big challenges that those cows face. So I suppose our logic was, well, if we can tackle those three issues together, if we can reduce the level of issues in those first 2 weeks after calving, can we then go and see and a better performance in terms of milk production and fertility. So in our product, we have our seaweed in there. So it is very, very high levels of completely bioavailable calcium, magnesium, as well as 72 other minerals in there. We have, and again, like I said, potassium is a huge challenge in a lot of areas. Having that extra magnesium in there is a huge benefit. that's not usually available in most oral calcium products. We also have some vitamin D3 in there. But we have to remember that our seaweed is proven in humans and in cattle to have a very strong, natural and potent anti-inflammatory effect. So we have the ideal ingredient in terms of we have something with a lot of calcium and magnesium in it, but it also acts as a very potent anti-inflammatory. And if you look at the latest work from Lance Baumgart, where he's saying, well, actually inflammation is the first thing that happens. And then the drop in blood calcium levels is a consequence of the inflammation. We used to think, I used to have this slide of this gateway disease idea, this gateway calcium drops and then all the problems happen afterwards. Whereas Lance is kind of saying, well, actually inflammation happens first. One of the side effects of that is the calcium dropping, but you have all the other issues in terms of energy status, production and all that. But the calcium dropping is a side effect of it. It's not the main event that starts everything that we used to think it was. And I think, again, our data would show that when we have our product in there with that anti-inflammatory effect, that when we compare to products that just put calcium in there, we get a very different range of performance across the lactation.
That's interesting.
Cowbell Pro from ChemLock Nutrition improves the health of transition cows. With its proprietary cap matrix technology and NutriLock chromium in every pellet, Cowbell Pro supports and enhances calcium metabolism and increased dry matter intake, helping to reduce dyscalcemia and improve transition outcomes, all without needing the extra steps of urine pH testing, low potassium forage, or routine boluses. Visit ChemLockNutrition.com to learn more about Cowbell Pro.
Maybe you don't know, but I'm curious, like the way you're talking about this, it's like a plant complex set of many minerals. So I'm sitting here thinking, okay, you see anti-inflammatory effects in multiple species. Do you have any idea what might drive that response with this product?
Yeah, we've done a nice bit of research. In cows, we've seen in terms of in induced acidosis, induced heat stress, and in transition cows, a lowering of those markers of inflammation.
Okay.
We're also just seeing in more detailed research, when there is an inflammation response, when that cow has an infection, it's an inflammatory response, we do want the cow to have some level of inflammation because that is the natural response. It's a natural thing. So we generally have a kind of a 12-hour quick response, and then you have a chronic response, which is from 12 hours afterwards. Yeah. So what we've seen with our seaweed is it does not affect the natural first response of the body. But after that, the chronic response, it has a very potent role to reduce the level of that ongoing inflammation, which is the thing when we start rolling into 1 week, into 2 weeks, into 3 weeks, if you have that inflammation going, it's holding back the performance of those cows. So it's good because if we had something that knocked inflammation right off the bat, that would be not an optimal scenario for the cow because you're just switching off her own natural ability to tackle an infection. So we know that we can have leave the cow to do her natural thing to get that thing under control, and then we help from that 12-hour point afterwards to try and reduce the challenge on those cows. And we look at body temperatures. Interestingly, we can see that we see an increase in the first 12, 18 hours after calving as that natural response kicks in. But that, from that point all the way to 2 weeks after calving, that the cows getting our product have lower body temperatures compared to the control groups. Yes. So there's definitely an effect there that is happening. And we know that if you get a rise in body temperature, it is a huge challenge for the cow, but it also takes a lot of energy for the immune system to fight that high level of inflammation, the high level of temperature. And at the time when every ounce of dry matter is really critical to really tee this cow up, we don't really want to be shipping 1 or 2 kilos of that to fight a big temperature effect.
Yeah, that's fair. You've referred to some important insights from your research. Maybe you could talk us through one or two of the studies you've conducted with this product.
Yeah, I suppose the most interesting one is it's a very large herd. In the year 2024 on the main farm, they calved in 2,035 second lactation and older cows. And of that, they had 5 cases of milk fever. So using a negative DCAD diet, but absolutely exemplary in terms of managing cows and calcium status. And no matter where you go in the world, you know, 0.25% of cows having a clinical case is as good as you will get. So yeah. We knew when we started the work there that, you know, we're going to get, it was going to be a tough challenge to match what those cows were doing, but it was absolutely exemplary. So in the trial, we had the group getting the standard treatment and then the group getting our two Cowstar complete boluses at calving. And when we looked at blood calcium status, it was exactly the same. Numerically, we were a little bit ahead, but from a statistical point of view, there was no difference. And that's interesting because that shows that those cows were isocalcemic. So if we saw any difference in performance after that, it was nothing to do with calcium because they were all exactly the same in terms of calcium. We also saw in terms of rumination levels, and we know rumination and calcium status are completely correlated, that the rumination levels between those two groups was exactly the same as well. But when we look at the levels of metabolic issues, so we look at it in terms of, so there were no clinical milk fever cases in either group, which we expected. But you look at your cases of retained placenta, you look at metritis, endometritis, dysplasia, meson, ketosis. The cows in our group had lower results of metabolic issues in those first 2-3 weeks after calving. Really where we see the big difference when we look at body condition scoring, we can see, and this is 140 cows, so 70 cows per group, we can see that we have a statistically significant higher body condition score every 2 weeks to 12 weeks into that lactation. So despite the calcium being exactly the same and the rumination being exactly the same, the energy status was notably different. We then saw in terms of those cows, 2.6 kilo. So it's going to be 5.3, 5.5 pounds of milk increase in milk production per day across the first 12 weeks in lactation. That control group were at about 100 pounds of milk. So they were no slouches. They were really, really top performers. But we still managed to increase the milk production on those cows across that time period. And again, when we look at fertility in that group, the conception rate of first service was 49%, which for that level of performance and production, these are 29,000 pound cows, is really, really good. Again, no slouches. Whereas we saw that the Cowstar group were at 63%. So a massive improvement in performance. So we've seen reduced levels of retained placenta and uterine infections and better body condition scores. And we know that those are two key drivers of better fertility in cows. And that data is very consistent. We do that on grazing cows and very high yielding cows. We get a very, very similar profile in terms of that increase in milk production and the increase in fertility and better body condition scores. And if we go back to that research paper from Ma with the 22 studies, they showed when we put oral calcium, just straight oral calcium into those cows, no effect on body condition scores, no effect on milk production, and no effect on fertility. Whereas we take Cowstar Complete, where we've taken a wider range approach to tackling a wider range of issues, we do see a benefit across the board that you don't get with other oral calcium products.
It's fascinating.
And there's another research group who are doing a lot around this whole idea of getting the calcium up consistently up to 48 and 96 hours after calving, but very much focused on the calcium side of the equation and getting the calcium perfect. And in that way, they have got the calcium perfect. But certainly from the available publicly available data on that research group, they're not having an impact in terms of energy status, in terms of glucose, in terms of BHBs, in terms of body condition score, and not seeing an effect in terms of production either. So I think, again, when we look purely at the calcium side, we don't shift the needle in terms of stuff that's actually going to pay the farmer return on investment in terms of more milk production and better fertility as well.
Very interesting. So I think you talked about it a little bit, but this is a bolus that you give one time. Like, what's your target window? Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So one of the big things we tried, it took us 7 years to perfect the technology, but it is to be able to give one dose to the cow. So one dose is two boluses at the point of calving.
Okay.
And it will elevate the blood calcium all the way to 48 hours and all the way to 96 hours in those cows. And that's really important because statistically speaking, the highest risk period for milk fever is between 12 and 24 hours after calving. So it's not the first 12 hours. It's the second 12 hours. And most traditional oral calcium products last for, well, they'll claim 12 hours, but it may only be 8 to 10 hours. So when you put the first one in, all those manufacturers, if you look at the label, recommend that the farmer should give a second dose 12 hours after calving so that when the first one is out of the system, you give an extra hit of calcium for these cows as they're just entering into that higher risk period. Whereas the concept we have is much more simple. It's just one handling of the cow. The two boluses go in the gun at the same time. But once she's done, she's okay for 48 hours. And after that point, they can start increasing their own supply of calcium. So it's very much in terms of convenience, in terms of farms that may not have a lot of labor available. or they may not have very good handling and drafting facilities. So catching that cow the second time can be too much of an effort and a job, and it just doesn't get done. This just simplifies that.
Yeah, well, and I was going to say too, I think I've seen a lot of farms thinking more about the stress implications of locking up the fresh pen every day. And that's really declined in the US, I think. So having a strategy that you could take care of this in the fresh pen, and then in theory, if she's healthy, you're not locking her up again.
Exactly.
Has some real advantages. So interesting.
And I think one of the real advantages in reality is, you know, the first time you go and you get the gun and you bolus that cow, and, you know, that's okay. When she sees you coming for the second time,
yeah,
with the gun in hand, she knows what you're about, and they generally tend to be very uncooperative. So
yes,
it can be a really tough job to do.
Yep, I agree with that.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Want a herd management software designed for you? BovaSync is helping herds by managing data faster and easier. Contact BovaSync today to learn more. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Accurately measure individual cow feed efficiency with the newest advancement from AffiMilk. Visit AffiMilk.com to learn more. That's AffiMilk.com. Evonik Animal Nutrition, sciencing the global food challenges. Cow Manager, ahead of the herd together. Support faster recovery when cows face inflammatory pressure. Contact AHV to discover the new Aspie formula. Reduce dyscalcemia and simplify transition cow care with Cowbell Pro from Chemlock Nutrition. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Rangin Livestock Nutrition. We partner with a purpose. Every dairy producer knows longevity doesn't happen by accident. AgriComfort, the cow comfort specialists, design rubber flooring and stall products that help support mobility and keep cows productive longer. It's about creating an environment where cows can perform year after year, because when she stays healthy and productive longer, that becomes part of your story. AgriComfort, because her longevity is your legacy. Visit agri-comfort.com to learn more.
Okay, well, we've got our famous questions we've got to throw at you. So first of all, what's your favorite dairy-related book or resource?
As you might have guessed, I like people who think outside the box and who just won't accept, you know, the standard protocol and say, well, can we not do things better? And I think as dairy farmers, I spend a lot of money asking and talking to people like the accountant, like the vet, like the nutritionist. But there's one team out there that can tell those farmers an awful lot out there, and it's the cows themselves. If you can only learn how to read what that cow is trying to tell you, because if every cow is at all times telling you something about the environment she's in. So there are two guys in Holland who developed this system called Cow Signals. So I'm not sure if it's very popular in the US or some people know or not, but
Yeah.
It's a fantastic way of thinking about things. And if you could just learn to read what that cow is telling you, it can tell you so many things, and you can make some small, what you might think are small changes, but could be big changes for the cow. And you can make a lot of improvements quite quickly if you could just learn how to read what that cow is telling you. It's very simple, but it can be very, very powerful and effective. And I think in terms of a dairy-related resource, that's, to me, is one of the best ones out there.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's brought that up on this show that I've heard. That's great. That's a good point. I'm familiar with that program. Very good. All right. What about your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
Okay, this one is a special one to me. So this is a book called Race Without End.
Okay.
So this was published in 1994, and I actually have a signed copy. So back in the 80s and the early to mid-90s in Ireland, Ireland was a very poor country.
Mm-hmm.
We were bottom of the league in terms of economic development and everything. And this guy called Eddie Jordan set up a Formula One team. And he became massively successful with that Formula One team. He was a really great entrepreneur. He won the Irish Entrepreneur of the Year competition. But he had an Irish team fighting at the real pinnacle of the biggest sport in the world. And just in terms of inspiration, when you're looking and nothing is going right in your country, and you can say, well, actually, people from Ireland can do the best of the best and fight up with Ferrari and with Williams and McLaren and all these big guys. And he is a hell of a story. That team now is the Aston Martin Formula One team. That team is worth billions today. But it started one Irish guy who was plucky enough to just give it a go and I'd see how far he could take it.
Wow. I hadn't heard of that story. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
And then that was kind of right when the Irish Tiger economy took off. Right?
Exactly. The mid-90s. Yeah. Really started to take off and we grew up a lot and everything developed. So we're very much at the top end of the scale rather than being the bottom. But when you're in a place where you look around and everything is dreary and unemployment is 30% and there's no real kind of hope and you could see something like this happen. I know he's inspired a lot of Irish people to kind of go, you know, we can do these things. We can fight on the global stage. And really interesting. Unfortunately, we lost Eddie Jordan last year. He died, but he's left a big legacy in sport and in business in Ireland.
Okay, last question. In your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
If I could distill it down to one thing, honesty. Mm. Being brutally honest. I find, and I will go to a lot of dairy farms, and I have a discussion with them, and the guys that are really open and say, look, these are the problems I have, you can make a lot of progress with those guys. And sometimes, a lot of times, what we might find as being a solution has nothing to do with us. It's nothing to do with bolus or anything like that. There could be something else. But if you can just find a guy that's really honest, you can make real progress. And I think sometimes you go to farm and the farmer's telling you, I'm here.
Yeah.
Well, you walk around the cows, you see the farm, and maybe they're here, but they might be down there, you know. So when you get out and you see, you get a really good appreciation for where they're at. But the guys that are completely honest, if the farm is here, they're there. They're not up here, they're here. Or sometimes a little bit down here, they're a bit humble. But the guys that can be really honest and say, look, these are the challenges. This is what we've been struggling with for the last few years. And we really want to focus on improving this part of the business. They can make real progress. The guys who just don't think it's a problem or don't address it or just a bit embarrassed or they don't want to admit it, you know, they just keep muddling on and not making progress.
I like that a lot. It brings back to mind to me a very short list of key traits of a good leader. And one of them was deal in reality. Like, you know, you can pump people up, you can try to support them, but we have to face the real issues we have with honesty. Like you said, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, John, I very much enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for being on the show today.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Barry. Thank you very much for having me.
So again, our guest today has been John Lawler from Anchor Life Sciences, and this has been another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show brought to you by Wisenetics. If you're not already following the show, you haven't liked it, make sure you do that so you don't miss the next episode. And we'll see you then.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.